I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 207 for the weekend starting 16 February 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, Zuma exits, but what now?
Also this week, Standard Bank appears to be building an MVNO, Chrome expands ad blocking, and why crypto miners are undermining the search for aliens.
Lots to talk about. Let's do it.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, Zoom exit has happened.
Oh, man, I feel quite happy today. Like, there's just a sense of, I guess, slight euphoria in the air for me.
Yeah.
It's been coming for such a long time.
Got up this morning, beautiful rains falling across Gauteng.
Oh, yes.
General sense of positivity in the air. I'm a bit tired today, though, because I stayed up for the speech, which started...
The waffle, you mean.
Started 45 minutes late. As is Zoom's wont, never starts anything on time. But yes, we won't be subjected to his interminably boring speeches in Parliament anymore.
And his terrible ways of giving a speech. I mean, yes. I could barely sit through it. I mean, yes. I was focusing on other things, actually. It was just, I couldn't. Yeah. And when he clears his throat, it's not how a president should be acting, guys.
But as someone pointed out, he really left this to the 11th hour. We lost some great jokes and memes doing the rounds already on the internet this morning.
11th hour.
But we'll talk a bit about Zuma in the podcast today, and specifically what's going to happen with the Department of Telecoms and the Department of Communications, which of course Zuma split in two after the last election, which has been a bit of a disaster. And it looks like those departments are going to be re-merged. But we'll get to that shortly. Before we do that, though, let's do our quiz. Do you want to do the first question, Richard?
Certainly. The first question in this week's quiz. Which ENCA reporter ended up interviewing people in the street after Jacob Zuma's resignation, only to have them use extreme coarse language on national television?
It was very funny. Which regulatory authority looks set to green light Elon Musk's broadband satellite plan?
Third question, which Samsung executive has been released from prison following his incarceration in a bribery scandal?
The Mobile World Congress is happening in a couple of weeks' time. In which city does this mega telecommunications event take place?
And the last question, how much money did Uber lose in the 2017 financial year?
It's a lot. That's our quiz. As always, results at the end of the show, but let's dive straight into the news. So Zuma is gone.
Insert loud cheers here.
I was kind of hoping that he refused to resign because for two reasons. First of all, just for the spectacle of watching his humiliation in Parliament, which would have been great fun to see. And secondly, because if he had been removed in a vote of no confidence, the entire cabinet would have been forced to resign. And I think that would have been a fantastic thing because we would have then had a completely clean slate and Ramaphosa would then be in a position to immediately replace the ministers with ministers he wants. I think that process is now going to take some time since the cabinet has not been forced to resign. However, I'm sure that Ramaphosa is going to reshuffle his cabinet in the not too distant future. Now, what's of interest to us, obviously, at Tech Central is what's going to happen to the portfolios that affect the technology industry, and that's obviously the Department of Communications and the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. That the Department of Communications was split in two after the election was it? The 2014 general election? Yes. He split the communications department in two. He fired Eunice Karim as minister. He appointed Siyabonga Ncwele as the Minister of Telecoms and Postal Services, and he appointed Faith Mwantambi as the Minister of Communications. Now, he's been heavily criticized for that decision ever since. It's caused all sorts of issues and problems in terms of, you know, which entities report to which minister. ICASA has been particularly problematic because that reports to the Minister of Communications, whereas most of the work it does is kind of within the ambit of the department or the Ministry of Telecommunications and Postal Services. It ran quite counter to the whole convergence mantra that we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years. Governments around the world have increasingly looked to create integrated ministries of communications, not go the other way around. And we still don't know the full reasons about why he did it. You know, a lot of speculation was that he wanted a pliant minister to look after the SABC. He certainly got that in the form of Faith Mutambi, who did her very best to protect Claudia Motsoeneng, who obviously was Zuma's praise singer. We've seen, I think, three ministers in that department since then. The Department of Telecoms has been more stable with Minister Tshwele. So the ANC held a, I think it was a policy conference towards the middle of last year, and one of the outcomes of that policy discussion was a recommendation, I don't even know if it was a recommendation, instruction, that the department, those two departments be re-merged into a new super ministry of ICT. And I think that's going to be one of the first things that Ramaphosa does as president, is to re-merge those departments and create the Department of ICT. Yeah. And it can't come soon enough. You know, the split in the department has caused just far too many problems. And with the ANC already, I'm putting that forward as one of its policy decisions from last year's conference, I think it's going to be very easy for Ramaphosa to re-merge those departments soon. I wouldn't be surprised if the announcement comes within the next few weeks. The question is, who will be the minister? I think Tshwele would be keen, and I think he's in with a shot of getting it. But my guess is that we'd probably have a new minister, and I don't think that would be a bad thing. In some respects, Tshwele's done okay. But in many respects, he hasn't. You know, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which he's been the he didn't write it, but he's been a very loud cheerleader for it, is very problematic for the industry, and particularly for the mobile operators and investment in the mobile industry. So there needs to be a revisiting of that Amendment Act, and I think a new minister would do that. Who would be the minister? I put out a question on Twitter last night asking this question, who would be good for the job, and or who do you think is going to get it? And a lot of names put forward. Stella Ndebeni Abrams, who is Tshwele's deputy at the moment. She's very young. She's a little bit of an unknown quantity. Very, very political woman. But I don't know enough about her to be able to comment on whether she'd do a good job or not. She's very much been behind the scenes. Other names that I've seen put forward, Jackson Mtembu. I think Chris Becker would have a heart attack if that happened, given Jackson Mtembu's views on multi-choice and encryption and all the rest of it. But he's certainly been very vocal. He certainly understands the broad – I think he has a reasonable understanding of the broadcasting side of things. I don't know if he really understands the issues in the broader ICT space, though. Mm-hmm. So that could be problematic. And Hilton Tarrant, who writes for MoneyWeb, came up with a very interesting name, and I think possibly a very good appointment, and that's Nkenke Kekana. Not a lot of people know him. He's an old ANC guy, very much in the Gauteng ANC. I think he's seen as a strong backer of Paul Mashatile, who's the new Treasurer General of the ANC. Very strong in the sort of Gauteng ANC region, and a strong backer of Ramaphosa's. Mm. Now he's got extensive experience in the sector. He was a former Parliamentary Portfolio Committee chairman on communications. He's invested in the sector certainly in the past. I know he's very close to Isaac Mopatlane, the former CEO of Business Connection, and of course his late brother Ben Mopatlane. And he understands the issues. He has degrees in telecommunications policy. On paper, he looks like a very good choice, and I think he's a moderate. I don't think he's going to come up with radical things that might damage the industry. So I thought Hilton's suggestion that he could be in with a strong possibility of taking over this new Ministry of ICT is a good one. So let's watch the space and see what happens. But there are quite a few names that could get put forward there. Ramaphosa could decide to keep Tshwele. I don't know if he will. I think the industry, certainly the big operators, the big mobile operators like Vodacom and MTN, will be hoping that Cyril's elevation to the presidency will have a positive impact on them and on the telecommunications industry, because of course he was a former chairman of MTN for many years, and so understands a lot of the issues in the industry, and you know, with the talk about the wholesale open access network and giving that all the spectrum and all that sort of thing, there could be a direct lobbying effort now by the mobile operators to have a fundamental rewrite of the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. I suspect that will be happening, that lobbying process.
Oh, yeah.
And if we've got a new minister, then we could see a whole revisiting of this thing, which I think would be a good thing.
Definitely. We need, I guess, with this change, you know, we can't have in some of these key positions. I think it's only going to be a good thing to have fresh blood coming in, new thinking. Because what we've seen with, you know, just coming back to the whole Zuma exit,
yeah.
Is that I think what Ramaphosa needs to do now is to show the country that, you know, he's obviously seen where the issues is. He knows what the country needs, and he needs to make the changes accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to bring fresh blood in, and so that the South African people, you know, don't feel like, you know, people that are left that are still part of the corruptibles,
yes,
is in these positions.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what this new ministry can do. I mean, new energy, common sense when it comes to, you know, the things that they need to execute on. You know, make sure that the industry and the people of South Africa win at the end of the day, not lose like we've been doing for the last decade.
Yeah. So I think you're right. There's a new feeling of positivity around, and let's hope Ramaphosa takes advantage of that, and we see a cabinet shakeup soon. We still don't know if Melusi Gigaba will be delivering the budget speech next Wednesday. I suspect he probably will. I don't know if he'll stay on as the finance minister in the long term, though. But he's certainly done all the work on the budget, so I think it makes sense for him to deliver the budget speech. Whether he stays on, you know, he's accused of being a Gupta enabler when he was the Minister of Public Enterprises. So he's tainted. He's doing his best to be seen to be a Cyril supporter and on the side of the of what's right. And you know, he was on CNN the night before Zuma's resignation, saying Zuma is going to go, he must go. Mm. You know, he plays the political winds very well, but there's a good chance he's going to be shifted out. There's a lot of deadwood in the cabinet, of course, as well, that needs to be cleaned out as a matter of urgency. People like Faith Mutambi, who's now the Minister of Public Service and Administration, if you can believe that, needs to be fired. Lynn Brown, the Minister of Public Enterprises, a Gupta enabler, needs to be fired. Mose Benzizwani, the Minister of Mineral Resources, or Mining, I'm not sure what that department's called now, very clearly a Gupta enabler, needs to be fired. There's a long list of people who need to be cleaned out of that cabinet, and I think he's going
to
do it.
And he has to show that he's going to make change, because I think everything's out in the air. I was quite surprised that, you know, with the Gupta raid yesterday morning,
the compound
raid. Mm. I mean, all of these things kind of came in a very convenient time, all kind of coming together. Somebody played the right cards at the right time,
yes,
which is, I guess, good for us now ultimately, but it just shows you, you know, the people who benefit from stuff like this, the broader political, government, world domination, you know, the people that benefit from these things are, you know, are playing a game behind the scenes, you know, with their money or with the money that they have that they can empower.
I think the Hawks have been sitting on this Gupta thing for a long time, possibly under instruction not to act.
Yeah, probably.
And now they're freed, so we're starting to see some things happen pretty quickly. I was interested to see Nazim Hawa, the former CEO of Oak Bay and fixer behind the scenes at places like Sahara and ANN7, etc., sitting in the court in Bloemfontein this morning. There was a report in the Star this morning that Atul Gupta tried to flee the country yesterday. He went to Lanseria Airport and wanted to leave the country on a private jet. And the pilot of the plane refused to take him.
Fantastic.
And I saw that.
Great
stuff. Give that man a bell.
Give that man a bell, yes.
Warrants of arrest are out. I was actually just listening to radio broadcast on the way in here, and a guy from the Hawks was saying that they've arrested 8 people, and 5 are still outstanding. Apparently, 2 of them in the country, 3 abroad. India, I think they are. India or Russia, their locations. They're working with the authorities over there, Interpol, to get these guys back. But isn't it just wonderful to see the Guptas and their associates in the dock in a courtroom in South Africa? I mean, starting to think we'd never see that day.
Yeah. But it's almost, I guess, in the other side also, it's a bit frustrating because we've all known the stuff has been going on for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been some exceptional journalism being done.
Yeah, Jacques Poe's book, of course, was key to all of this.
I guess the big thing here is we can't let this happen again. You know, those kind of people and people that are corruptible, you can clearly see what an impact that can have on a country.
Yes.
I think, you know, the new presidency under Cyril Ramaphosa needs to be, I guess, extra vigilant with this type of thing, especially yeah. when employing new people and the people that they bring close to them, yeah. so that they're not corruptible.
You've got to put the right people in the right positions, which Zuma wasn't doing. I mean, he was putting compromised people like Tom Moyane at the head of SARS. I mean, you don't mess with an organization like SARS. And yeah, I mean, we're now sitting on a 50 billion rand plus budget deficit. It's probably going to be much higher than that when the budget speech is read next week. You've got to have people with absolute integrity leading that organization. Pravin Gordhan did a fantastic job as SARS commissioner. And, Ramaphosa is going to have to do a lot of cleaning out. He's probably going to make a lot of enemies in the process. But, yeah, you've got to start at the top, and the guy at the top is now gone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully the balance will swing back to the middle now. I mean, it's been, you know, far too much on the one side, you know, after 94. It swung completely the other way in many ways. Yeah. You know. I'm very excited.
Yeah. I suppose we also have to be wary of becoming too enthusiastic and too optimistic about these things. Let's remember that it was the ANC that enabled this president in the first place. The same political party is still in power. Sure, there's a new bunch of guys in charge. The new president appears to be clean and incorruptible. There's no doubt that things are pointing in the right direction now. But this is the same political party that enabled Zuma and everything he did.
I heard a comment, and I don't know who this was from, but somebody said that the ANC party, their members, they don't expect from them to think or to vote with their conscience. They expect them to vote what they tell them to vote.
The collective,
which has always bugged me. You know, the whole thinking that here's a government with people that are supposed to be thinking for themselves to do the best they can within their portfolio.
Taking instruction, yeah.
And at the end of the day, they're just voting what they're told, which kind of seems defiant to the whole purpose of a government, of a democracy.
I mean, if you look at the British Parliament, you often find that members of the same party don't vote with the way the Prime Minister wants them to vote, and they'll defy her or him. And it's happened on many occasions. The rebel MPs, I think they call them. They vote against or contrary to the wishes of the Prime Minister or the general view of the party.
As long as
and they don't get punished and fired for doing that.
Which is fantastic because, I mean, their job is to, for lack of a better word, portfolio they're looking after, they need to do the best they can to make sure that is the best version of that job that they can do. And if it's voting against what your boss tells you because you believe that this is the best way forward, you know, that's the kind of people we want. You know, think for yourself and really bring change rather than, you know.
And of course, there were quite a few of those in the ANC who voted to have Zuma removed at the last vote of no confidence in Parliament. That was obviously a secret ballot, so we don't know who they were, but we can just we can guess that they included people like Derek Harnacombe and Pravin Gordhan. Who have spoken out very publicly against Zuma.
Which begs another question I've always wondered about. Why isn't all votes secret? I mean, there's obviously a reason why you don't make your vote secret, because you want to keep these people in line, right? If it wasn't an issue, again, you know, a secret vote is seemingly the way to do it, because you don't want to be intimidated for your...
I don't think it's secret in the UK, and people vote anyway. They vote according to their conscience.
Sure, but I guess the broader system works much better there.
Yeah, it's a much more mature environment. It's still a very young democracy.
True that.
But I think we've got some exciting times ahead. Quite a few people I've seen on Twitter saying our politics is going to get so boring now. First of all, boring isn't bad. Yeah. And secondly, I don't think it's going to get boring. There's still a lot of cleanup to come, and I think we're going to be seeing headlines about what exactly happened under the Zuma administration for many years to come. As things start to get cleaned up and sorted out, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. And the people being brought to book who deserve it, you know, people that were part of this problem, part of the Zuma, the Zuma cabinet, the Zuma train.
The hangers-on and the enablers and all the rest of them. Of course, Zuma's not off the hook at all. He's got an impending case of corruption, 783, probably going to be more by the time he comes to court. So we could yet see him in the dock.
He must be a worried man right now. I wonder what he thinks his next steps are. he doesn't have his protection.
Well, he did claim that black people are not like white people. They don't allow stress to get to them. But I think he's very stressed. I think he's very stressed. He has to be.
Everybody around him is starting to fall. I mean, I guess
The Guptas are going to sing like canaries.
Oh yeah, I mean they won't be loyal.
Yeah.
No loyalty among thieves like that, I think.
Anyway, fascinating times ahead. What's the time now? Hoppest 1. Zuma. Hoppest 1 on Thursday afternoon. Zuma is getting sworn in as our new president in exactly 30 minutes' time. Ah, sorry, Ramaphosa.
We didn't go back 10 years and we didn't... wasn't a time warp, okay.
Yeah. So, new president by the time you listen to this podcast, and the talk is the State of the Nation address will be delivered tomorrow night, Friday evening, in Parliament. I'll be, it's a Friday night, but I'll be watching.
Beer in hand, we will have to, and yeah, look, at this is going to be, if it does it right, it's going to be a big occasion.
Set the record. Very interesting to see, because that speech is going to set the tone for his presidency, or at least his first year in office.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to want to get off the ground quickly, and it'll be very interesting to hear what he has to say about corruption, about fixing state-owned enterprises, and all the other challenges that he's got, and then how quickly he won't announce a new cabinet at the State of the Nation, but I think that may come very quickly, possibly just after the budget.
It'll definitely be in his interest to do it quickly.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Get rid of that rot.
Yes. Of course, we will be following. We will be watching very closely any news on plans to re-merge communications and telecoms and who the new minister might be.
Finally.
Right. let's move on. Standard Bank. We broke a story this week, actually, that Standard Bank appears to be building a mobile virtual network operator. They've hired Steve Bailey, ex-Virgin Mobile CEO, and, of course, the guy who started MVNX. The company that does mobile virtual, quite a mouthful, this mobile virtual network enablement. Basically, they build MVNOs on behalf of companies, and they launched Mr. Price Mobile. What else did they do?
That's still going, Mr. Price Mobile.
I think so. Boxcel, the Afrikaans MVNO. what else have they done?
Boxcel,
yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of big names they've enabled, and some smaller ones, like Me and You Mobile. And so he's joined Standard Bank. He joined towards the end of last year. And my understanding, talking to various sources, not to Steve, because he's not talking, and Standard Bank isn't commenting either, but my sources in the industry say they are hiring telecom skills quite aggressively. And they are looking to build an MVNO, which is very interesting because two and a half years ago, I spoke to Peter Schlierbusch, who is the, I think he's the head of retail and business banking, I could be wrong there, at Standard Bank, and he said they had looked at the MVNO model and decided against it. So something's changed in the last 2.5 years where they now believe it makes sense to do it. And of course, there is another big bank that's already launched an MVNO in South Africa, and that's FNB Connect. Which I believe has done reasonably well. I don't have the latest numbers, but I think they've got in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of customers.
Is there devices too? I like the angle where they have made the devices available. I'm sure Standard Bank will look at that angle too.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. They own branded devices, which unfortunately are network locked, but which I've criticised them heavily for in a previous podcast. But it's quite exciting to see a major brand like this coming into the market, and they're the biggest retail bank in South Africa by customer numbers, so in a strong position to leverage that base. I think the last set of retail customer numbers I saw was 11.8 million.
Sure.
That's a big number. You convert 10% of that and you've got a meaningful MVNO.
Oh yeah, definitely.
We'll keep an eye on that space. It's probably a bit early in terms of expecting any news in the next few weeks, but I would expect later this year that we're going to see some sort of announcement from Standard Bank, given the people that they're hiring there, given that Steve Bailey is on their payroll now. That can only mean one thing. So Standard Bank MVNO, I wonder what it'll be called. Standard Bank Mobile sounds a bit dull. They always had Blue. Remember Blue Bean?
Blue Bean, yeah, that was a very cool brand.
Maybe they
very
call cool. it Blue Mobile or something.
Blue Mobile, that could be a cool name. Should we give them? Should we allow them to take these ideas and execute with them without royalties? We can throw a lot of names out. Yeah, no, with royalties.
With royalties, yes. Maybe we should register the trademark.
I'm sure. Blucell.co.za, I'm sure he's taken.
Blucell, yeah, Blue Label Telecoms, I'm sure, has registered that. Blue Mobile, yeah, they may have a problem with Blue Label. There may be a conflict there. But keep an eye on that space. Interesting to see the MVNO market starting to take off in South Africa. The big question, of course, is which network are they going to use?
Yes.
There was a rumor two, three years ago when they were looking at it back then that they were going to partner with MTN. And in fact, Phuthuma Nhleko, the former CEO of MTN, said at the time they were working with a financial services partner to launch an MVNO. So my guess is that they were talking to Standard Bank. The talk in the market, and this is really unconfirmed, so don't take this as gospel, but the talk that I've picked up, stompies as I like to call them, is that they are talking to Vodacom, which would be very interesting because Vodacom's never done an MVNO before. Mm. Neither has MTN for that matter.
But I guess if you have a big enough customer, you will consider it.
Yeah.
Standard Bank being that.
Yeah. So my guess is it's either Cell C or ever Vodacom. Cell C is the most obvious one because they've got the MVNO platform. They have facilitated the launch of so many MVNOs in South Africa. Every MVNO in this market right now, without exception, is on Cell C.
But if Standard Bank wants to differentiate themselves, I mean, I would say the kind of saturated market, and not saturated, but there's a lot of players in the MVNO market. They want to really differentiate themselves. I think going with one of the operators and starting something like that with them will give them a big one-up, not just for the basic like coverage and that kind of thing, but I think just in terms of a partnership, you know, it's definitely you're playing a different ballgame. And I guess when it comes down to rand and cents, you'll probably be able to be more efficient and make more money working with the bigger operator because you're cutting out essentially the middleman.
Yes. And I think Vodacom might be more open now to an MVNO than they might have been in the past, especially with all the pressure in terms of the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill and opening the network to wholesale partners and all that sort of thing. It might be good PR, at the very least, for them to have a partner like that on their books. And of course, working with a company the size of Standard Bank means that this project could be very successful. But we'll have to wait and see who they really have partnered with. Maybe they haven't even signed any deals yet, maybe that early in the process.
But an MVNO we will definitely see.
From Standard Bank? Mm. It looks that way.
Yeah.
They might pull the plug on it before they go live, but given the amount of investment they're putting in, that I hear they're putting in, it sounds like they've given the green light to it. But as I said, Standard Bank is saying absolutely nothing about it right now.
By saying nothing, they could be saying a lot too.
Yes, I got a very terse no comment when I inquired about it. We need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped box fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a tier one internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehat?
What's up, Duncan?
What's up? What's up is Chrome is adding ad blocking or expanded ad blocking to its web browser. When I saw the headline, I thought, oh my word. You know, because I'm a publisher and we have ads.
Yeah.
We rely on advertising. It's our business model. But once I had a look at what exactly Chrome was doing, I wasn't concerned at all. In fact, what they're doing is they're simply going to be blocking the most offensive sort of advertising you see on the internet, like these horrible block-up pop-up ads up here that won't allow you to view a website until you've waited 30 seconds or something like that. I think they're called interstitial ads. And you know, on the web, you've got, you know, some websites engage in you know, horrible ads that just ruin the user experience. At Tech Central, we conform to all of the standards that Google, I forget what the name of the standards is, but Google's got.
They have ad guidelines.
There's an ad guidelines on how online advertising should work, and we conform as Tech Central to that completely. And I'm sure most serious publishers do the same. Mm-hmm. But you know, some websites, some blogs, some websites really do take advantage, and some of that those ads can be malware that in fact run scripts to use your computer for crypto mining and all that sort of thing. So I'm quite in favor of Google introducing this sort of limited ad blocking for the most offensive type of ads, because it improves the user experience of everyone on the internet.
It's almost like the first line defense, you know, getting rid of that. There's a lot of these guys, you know, the pop-ups are bad, but even, you know, once you browse, scroll down to the bottom, and then you have like three or four ads popping up because, you know, they're tracking where you are on the page.
Yes.
Yeah, no, hopefully this will make a bit of a dent in that because,
yeah.
You know, I guess you can. I run a normal pop-up blocker, which works fantastically. But again, you know, it's third-party apps, you know, which I clean from time to time. I actually think I disabled it in my last update. So
yes.
It'll be nice to have something natively built in.
Yes.
Gives that extra level of protection. Yes. Stuff for moms and pops too, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in two minds about ad blockers. I mean, ads fund important journalism, and I use an ad blocker, but I whitelist a lot of sites in that ad blocker. Sites that are doing good journalism, I will whitelist them, and in fact. Any site that is publishing news and is providing free news, I tend to whitelist.
Yeah.
I just put on the ad blocker to stop those nasty ads on non-news sites, non-reputable news sites.
Yes.
I've been giving some thought to the idea of having a some sort of message on Tech Central. If you're using an ad blocker and you're blocking our ads, asking visitors to disable it. I see the Daily Maverick has started doing that. You go onto the Daily Maverick's website and there's a little pop-up that appears if you're using an ad blocker, and it asks you to disable it. And if you don't, well, you can click on an option saying, I think it says, no journalists deserve to go hungry, and you click on that.
That's cool.
I'm in two minds about whether to do that either. Mm.
But surely you can detect when a user has an ad blocker.
Yes, you can.
And then serve them that ad, not everybody that lands. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, no, that's how it works.
The guys. Okay,
that's how it works, yeah. It's quite simple to detect, and there are plenty of, you know, if you're using WordPress, for example, there are plenty of plugins that you can use to detect.
I think you should. I mean, you know, how much have we debated around paywalls and why and why it's a problem, but also kind of it's needed in the modern age of the media. I don't think it's unfair to ask these things, you know, of people. Mm. You know, Corey, what's the alternative? Putting up a paywall, and you don't want to do that.
You don't want to.
It's not the alternative. It's not the solution.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyone listening to our podcast who uses an ad blocker on Tech Central, please whitelist us.
Yeah. Rather use a pop-up blocker. That's the stuff that you really want to be worried about.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, I support Google in this move. And Google, of course, isn't going to ban, you know, isn't going to implement a full-on ad blocker in Chrome because Google is an advertising business.
Network, yeah.
They're an advertising business. But, yeah.
Doing that a little bit to make the web a more
pleasant experience.
Place, yeah,
yeah. 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 So, Rehot, you came across this story. It looks quite fun. Crypto miners are undermining the search for aliens. Tell us a bit more about this.
Never thought those words would all be coming in the same sentence. But, yes, so, you know, I mean, we've been talking about crypto mining and I guess the impact that on graphics cards, the fact that graphics cards are more expensive and very difficult to get to because they're so much more efficient at running these algorithms or running these scripts that obviously identify calculate whatever needs to be calculated.
Mm.
So one of the I'm just trying to find my link here, which I think I may have closed. But one of the stories that came out recently was that the SETI guys are running into a bit of a problem because they can't get hold of graphics cards.
Yeah.
So you know, SETI basically has an open source platform where anybody can run the SETI software on their computer and use their own hardware to detect signals for aliens. But SETI also, SETI at Berkeley's Institute also has their own range of computers that they're running, obviously, all of the search for alien life on. So, yeah, on the website Motherboard from Vice, they basically reported that SETI is now running into a bit of a problem. They're slowing down. Their efforts are slowing down because they simply can't stay up the pace with graphics cards in their computers, to dissect these signals coming into their servers. It's a bit of an interesting story, but I guess something that we've kind of come to expect from the cryptocurrency, like this weird offspin, the fact that something we kind of took for granted, graphics cards, is kind of becoming a rare commodity.
They're rare as hen's teeth, yeah. They can't make them fast enough. It's a big problem. It's a big problem indeed. Cool. That's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week, I thought, let's just make the whole country the winner. Zuma stepped down. Of course, the Rand has strengthened considerably. I think it was 11.65 this morning. I'm not sure what it's doing now. Let me just open up xe.com and have a look. Currently trading 11.66. So it's at its strongest levels in about 3 years. And, of course, that's going to translate into cheaper technology for us nerds.
And buying stuff online from overseas.
Exactly.
I subscribe to so many online services, and I will see a massive reduction in my monthly credit card bills to these services, including Dropbox and all these guys.
Me too.
Every little, one or two rand makes a massive difference if you have 220 of these services running.
Yes.
Yeah, exciting stuff.
So exciting. You see the rand on the advance for a change. And our loser this week, for obvious reasons, is what I shall collectively call the Zuptas.
The Zuptas.
No, I think we don't need to say any more on that. We've spoken about it plenty in this podcast already. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I've been playing on my Android phone for a little while. I've always been a fan of tower defense games. You know what those are, right?
You
have a path of enemies running towards you or running through, and you need to build a set of towers or whatever. I mean, there's various games that play on this concept. Now, the one that I came across is called Kingdom Rush, which is basically just one of those games. But it's a hell of a lot of fun to play. It's the kind of thing that you can just start up and run. I mean, it's a beautiful game. Oh, I'm just trying to show Duncan over here. Select the play mode. And as the game loads, you obviously have various levels, waves that you have to defend against. But your job is to build various little towers to defend your kingdom, essentially, from everybody that's going to come and attack it. So, basically I can build, so I'm just going to build an archer, well, a bunch of arrow guys.
It's an RPG, basically.
No, it's a tower defense game. So it's not strategy so much as what it is. Oh, it's a strategy game rather than an action game. So I've built my tower. Why is these guys not coming? Oh, I paused it. No, I didn't. Anyway, as soon as I've built two guys,
I think the much more important question here, Richard, is whether you are falling for Android.
Yes, I've moved to Android now. I really enjoy the experience. There's a lot of things I do miss on my iPhone. I have my iPhone still on the side for certain things. I guess the way certain things work, the way that I switch between apps, it's just I haven't been got used to it.
Oh, just need to get used to it.
It's just getting used to things. But Android is big love of my life right now. So that's Kingdom Rush. I couldn't show you a proper demo. It was taking a bit long to load.
No problem.
So basically you have a bunch of guys running through your kingdom, and you need to kill them all with various tools at your disposal. And obviously the more you level up, the better your
cool
tools become and your weapons become. It's a last game to pick
up. Is it an Android exclusive, or is it available on other platforms?
It's Android and iOS.
And iOS. Yes. Okay. Yes. All right, cool. We'll include a link in the show notes to the Android version. My pick this week is – I'm just going to actually pick as a broad category and then dive down a bit. But my broad category pick this week is mechanical keyboards. I was always a bit skeptical. Mechanical keyboards were those things you used to use when you had an old Commodore or something like that, one of those old IBM machines. We moved to these soft touch keyboards years ago. I was a bit skeptical. I'm doing a bit of research on them, and I decided to take the plunge. So I bought a mechanical keyboard, and my word, I should have done it a long time ago. I can type at least 10 words a minute faster. I did some online typing tests.
Why is that? Is just because the
I don't
layout?
Know. It's just this, it feels so much sturdier as you type. It feels more sturdy, and I don't know. It's just I can type so much quicker. I did tons of research on this, and there are different types I forget what they call this, the more mechanic that sits underneath the key. There's a company called Cherry Corporation that makes these. And they could get different.
Like a little dampener almost. Like
yeah, exactly.
Plastic,
I think it's a steel, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
but
steel,
all
right.
Or aluminium or some sort of metal. I suppose it depends on the keyboard. But there are different colors to denote different types of key feelings. So you get cherry red, which is the one favored by gamers where there's no reaction at all. So super fast. Response. So a lot of the mechanical keyboards that are sold in the market for gamers are cherry red, of the cherry red type. And I did a lot of research. You get cherry blue, cherry brown, etc. And I did a lot of research, and I decided to go for cherry brown type keys because they apparently provide the optimal mix between gaming responsiveness and typing. And I went to the shop and played around with a few of them, and cherry brown is the one I decided to go for. Now, if you're a gamer, you're probably going to want to get cherry red, the cherry red type. But cherry brown is beautiful, and I can type so quickly on it.
I must check it out.
If you work in an office environment and you've got colleagues close to you, you probably don't want to buy one of these keyboards because they're probably going to kill you because they make a lot of click, 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 clickety clack sounds as you type away. They're not quiet like
those old IBM, those big white ones.
Exactly.
You can hear them from a mile away.
Exactly. It's a very similar concept. But these keyboards have made such enormous progress. The keyboard I went for a bit of a Rolls-Royce solution. I got the Corsair K95 Platinum.
Nice.
Beautiful keyboard, full RGB and programmable. So
now there's a rave happening in your desktop.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. So when my computer goes to sleep, the keyboard lights up in the spiral rainbow effect.
That's cool.
Programmable 16 million colors. You can create your own effects on the keyboard. You can download effects.
Wow.
You can download effects from the internet. So people create their own. You can download them. But you can do all sorts of cool things. So the one I like to use is as I'm typing, it lights up the keys in different random colors. And then it fades away, and you can select the period of time for the fade away. I think mine's set to about 5 seconds.
Cool.
So as you type a sentence, and you look down at your keyboard, and you see a whole bunch of keys have lit up in rainbow colors.
Nice.
And then it fades away. This is a bit overboard. I think you can get you can get a lot cheaper option than the one I went for, and ones that don't light up and make your desktop look like a disco. But they're pretty cool, and you can buy download color combinations that work with games that you want to play, for example.
Yeah.
So you can have on keyboard lighting effects depending on what's happening on the screen as you play the game.
That is very cool.
But fully programmable, and it appeals to the kid in me, I must say.
So when you buy with those cherries, do you buy the keyboard and say, I want this keyboard with the cherry brown?
Yes.
Or do you buy those cherry brown separately?
No, you buy your keyboard is manufactured according to
like
the type.
A different product.
Okay. Exactly. I think the K95 Platinum, for example, which I got, has brown and red options. If you want to buy that as a full-on gaming keyboard, then get the red.
Okay.
If you want the ultra high responsiveness, etc., for very fast FPS shooters, that's the keyboard you want to go for. But if you do a mix of typing and a bit of gameplay, like I do, then the brown is probably the better option. But go to a computer store and type on them and see what you like before you make a purchase.
I'd be interested to see what because the keys look much different. I mean, it's an old looking keyboard, right? It looks like those old keys.
Yeah.
They're very raised. I'd be interested to see how I type on them now, because I've been used to a Mac keyboard for the last, 10, 15 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try this out.
It took me a few minutes to get used to it, but within a few minutes I was touch typing away. I was on
gaming like a champion.
No, I haven't been doing much of that. But there are lots of these websites online where you can test your typing speed, and I tested with the old keyboard, and I was getting around 70 to 75 words a minute, and on this one I'm getting about 80 to 90 words a minute.
That's an impressive strike rate.
Yes. So
I'll definitely go try it out.
That's from 20 years of typing staring at the screen. I've got
I know every time you type when I'm around, I mean, writing articles and stuff, it's unbelievable the way the words move across the screen, because you literally just hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
One of the best things I ever did was go on a touch typing course. I went and learned how to touch type properly.
Oh, wow, properly.
It was the best training. I mean, it's very mechanical, rote process. You sit there and they make you type things.
It's learning where your fingers need to go, basically.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. I mean, it starts with putting your fingers on the F and J keys, your index fingers, and going from there. But touch typing, I can't imagine staring at the keyboard while I'm typing and then looking at the screen and staring at the keyboard and looking at the screen. I just look at the screen all the time and type.
Yeah. I remember when that switch happened. I did a bit of it in school when typing at school was still a thing. But for me it was all just out of starting to write so much. You know, initially you kind of
it sort of comes back
and
to yourself.
Just now again, 20 years later, it's just second nature.
It's like learning to ride a bicycle, I suppose.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But now these damn smartphones with their touch screens, you know, that changes everything.
Yes, indeed. You know, I hate typing on a phone, actually.
Yeah,
I was so glad then when WhatsApp became available desktop, because I was always looking at my phone and trying to type on that little keyboard and always making mistakes. And now I even tend to leave my WhatsApp messages until I make it on my desk and then respond.
Yeah, I'm the same with any messages. I mean, you can just have so much better conversation. I mean, it feels like you're wasting your time trying to type a message. And with auto-correction and trying to do it in Afrikaans, even with a keyboard app. What's it? Keyboard app? I forgot it.
SwiftKey.
Anyway, SwiftKey, yeah. Mm. Fantastic app, but yeah, still.
Still, it's slow. Oh, it's slow.
Keyboard's the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, when I need to type anything more than 10 words in WhatsApp now, I send a voice note. Voice note functionality is so useful.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot more of those, but voice notes are weird for me because you can't, like, you can read a message anywhere, but a voice note.
You have to wait. Sometimes you have to wait if you're in a meeting or something.
Because sometimes I play loud, sometimes I put it up on my ear, then I listen to it. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, my wife and I just use voice notes all the time because it's so convenient.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah. It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I mean, before we'd make a phone call, I'd just send a voice note. I'm sure the operators aren't happy about it, especially since I'm often in my Wi-Fi zone and I'm sending a voice note, it's going over Wi-Fi, my wife's at the office going over their Wi-Fi. So the mobile revenue, voice revenue is disappearing from us. But I've seen it, the amount of money I spend on phone calls has dropped significantly.
Oh, yeah. Long lived data.
Indeed. Cool. Well, that's our show this week. Hang on, we're going to do the quiz.
The quiz.
Do you want to go?
Yes. The first question in this week's quiz: which ENCA reporter ended up interviewing people in the street after Jacob Zuma's resignation, only to have him use extreme coarse language on national television? If you haven't seen the clip, extremely funny, and the journalist there was Nicholas Bauer.
Which regulatory authority looks set to greenlight Elon Musk's broadband satellite plan? And that's the U.S. Federal Communications Commission.
Third question: which Samsung executive has been released from prison following his incarceration in a bribery scandal? The answer is J.Y. Lee.
And the Mobile World Congress is happening in a couple of weeks' time. In which city does this mega telecommunications event take place? And that's, of course, Barcelona.
And the last question: how much money did Uber lose in the 2017 financial year? And the answer is a massive $4.5 billion.
Amazing. On revenue of $7.5.
How does a company survive essentially giving away services like this and be, you know, it's...
They've got deep-pocketed shareholders. This is the answer to that question.
At which point do they call it? At which point do they say, guys, okay?
Well, the CEO, whose surname I can't pronounce, I call him Dora K.
Oh, yeah. Kalenik?
No, he's the old guy. Kadawski or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was interviewed by Bloomberg saying that they've kind of adopted the Amazon model approach. They're just going to keep pouring money into this thing to grow. So I don't expect Uber to be profitable anytime soon.
I guess Uber will need to, they'll be a massive company regardless, and I think when that shift comes to automation, I mean, that's where we'll probably see a bit of an upsurge there, because I think they're playing that long game.
Yes. And, of course, we know with Amazon, Jeff Bezos is ready to turn on the profit tap at any time.
Mm.
I mean, he just cuts back on spending, and the company jumps into the black. And he started to do that in the last set of results, and I see that Amazon is now worth more than Microsoft by market cap.
Wow.
Which is massive. It's not enterprise value, of course. I haven't looked at the debt positions of each company, but just purely on market cap, Amazon is worth more than Microsoft, just over $700 billion.
Sure.
I still maintain that Amazon is going to be the first tech company, or the first company, I think, with a market cap north of $1 trillion.
Yes.
It's either them or Apple, but I think Amazon's going to get there first.
Yeah, Amazon is definitely, I think, the biggest team engine there.
Mm, for sure. As always, if you've got any feedback, info@techcentral.co.za is our email address. Thanks for listening. Until next week, from Rachel and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.